Amalagin sa bandam kanukan
Ing Security Industries Semi-Autonomous Guard Unit Number A367 lives in a pleasant black-and-white metaverse where porterhouse steaks grow on trees, dangling at head level from low branches, and blood-drenched frisbees fly through the crisp, cool air for no reason at all until you catch them. He has a little yard all to himself. It has a fence around it. He knows he can't jump over the fence. He's never actually tried to jump it because he knows he can't. He doesn't go into the yard unless he has to. It's hot out there. He has an important job. Protect the yard. Sometimes people come in and out of the yard. Most of the time they are good people, and he doesn't bother them. He doesn't know why they are good people. He just knows it. Sometimes they are bad people, and he has to do bad things to them to make them go away. This is fitting and proper. Out in the world beyond his yard, there are other yards with other doggies just like him. These aren't nasty dogs. They are all his friends. The closest neighbor doggy is far away, farther than he can see. But he can hear the doggy bark sometimes when a bad person approaches his yard. He can hear other neighbor doggies too, a whole pack of them, stretching off into the distance in all directions. He belongs to a big pack of nice doggies. He and the other nice doggies bark whenever a stranger comes into their yard or even near it. The stranger doesn't hear him, but all the other doggies in the pack do. If they live nearby, they get excited. They wake up and get ready to do bad things to that stranger if he should try to come into their yard. When a neighbor doggy barks at a stranger, pictures and sounds and smells come into his mind along with the bark. He suddenly knows what that stranger looks like, what he smells like, how he sounds. Then if that stranger should come anywhere near his yard, he will recognize him. He will help spread the bark along to other nice doggies so that the entire pack can all be prepared to fight the stranger. Tonight, semi-autonomous guard unit number A-367 is barking. He is not just passing some other doggies' bark to the pack. He is barking because he feels very excited about things that are happening in his yard. First, two people came in. This made him excited because they came in very fast. Their hearts are beating quickly, and they are sweating, and they smell scared. He looked at these two people to see if they were carrying bad things. The little one is carrying things that are a little naughty, but not really bad. The big one is carrying some pretty bad things. But he knows somehow that the big one is okay. He belongs in this yard. He is not a stranger. He lives here. And the little one is his guest. Still, he senses there is something exciting happening. He starts to bark. The people in the yard don't hear him barking, but all the other nice doggies in the pack far away hear him, and when they do, they see these two scared nice people, smell them, and hear them. Then more people come into his yard. They are also excited. He can hear their hearts beating. Saliva floods his mouth as he smells the hot, salty blood pumping through their arteries. These people are excited and angry and just a little bit scared. They don't live here. They are strangers. He doesn't like strangers very much. He looks at them and sees that they are carrying three revolvers, a .38 caliber and two .357 magnums, that the .38 is loaded with hollow points, one of the .357s is loaded with Teflon bullets and has also been cocked, and that the pump shotgun is loaded with buckshot and already has a shell chambered, plus four more shells in its magazine. The things that the strangers are carrying are bad, scary things. He gets excited. He gets angry. He gets a little bit scared, but he likes being scared. To him, it is the same thing as being excited. Really, he has only two emotions, sleeping and adrenaline overdrive. The bad stranger with the shotgun is raising his weapon. It is an utterly terrible thing. A lot of bad, excited strangers are invading his yard with evil things, come to hurt the nice visitors. He barely has time to bark out a warning to the other nice doggies before he launches himself from his doghouse, propelled on a white-hot jet of pure, feral emotion. In YT's peripheral vision, she sees a brief flash, hears a clunking noise. She looks over in that direction to see that the source of the light is a sort of doggy door built into the side of the Hong Kong franchise. The doggy door has, in the very recent past, been slammed open by something coming from the inside, headed for the lawn grid with the speed and determination of a howitzer shell. As all of this registers in YT's mind, she begins to hear the shouting of the Jeeks. This shouting is not angry and not scared either. No one has had time to get scared yet. It is the shouting of someone who has just had a bucket of ice water dumped over his head. This shouting is still getting underway. She is still turning her head to look at the Jeeks when the doggy door emits another burst of light. Her eyes flick that away. She thinks that she saw something, a long round shadow cross-sectioned in the light for a blurry instant as the door was being slammed inward. But when her eyes focus on it, she sees nothing except the oscillating door same as before. These are the only impressions left in her mind, except for one more detail. A train of sparks that danced across the lawn grid from the doggy door to the Jeeks and back again during this 1 second event, like a skyrocket glancing across the lot. People say that the rat thing runs on four legs. Perhaps the claws on its robot legs made those sparks as they were digging into the lawn grid for traction. The Jeeks are all in motion. Some of them have just been body slammed into the lawn grid and are still bouncing and rolling. Others are still in mid-collapse. They are unarmed. They are reaching to grip their gun hands with the opposite hand, still hollering, though now their voices are tinged with a certain amount of fear. One of them has had his trousers torn from the waistband all the way down to the ankle, and a strip of fabric is trailing out across the lot, as though he had his pocket picked by something that was in too much of a hurry to let go of the actual pocket before it left. Maybe this guy had a knife in his pocket. There is no blood anywhere. The rat thing is precise. Still, they hold their hands and holler. Maybe it's true what they say, that the rat thing gives you an electrical shock when it wants you to let go of something. "Look out," she hears herself saying. "They got guns." Hiro turns and grins at her. His teeth are very white and straight. He has a sharp grin, a carnivore's grin. "No, they don't. Guns are illegal in Hong Kong, remember?"
"They had guns just a second ago,"
YT says, bulging her eyes and shaking her head. "The rat thing has them now," Hiro says. The Jeeks all decide they better leave. They run out and get into their taxis and take off, tires a-squeal. YT backs the taxi on its rims out over the SCD and into the street, where she grindingly parallel parks it. She goes back into the Hong Kong franchise, a nebula of aromatic freshness trailing behind her like the tail of a comet. She is thinking, oddly enough, about what it would be like to climb into the back of the car with Hiro Protagonist for a while. Pretty nice, probably. But she'd have to take out the dentata, and this isn't the place. Besides, anyone decent enough to come help her escape from the clink probably has some kind of scruples about boffing 15-year-old girls.
"That was nice of you," he says, nodding at the parked taxi. "Are you going to pay for his tires, too?"
"No, are you?"
"I'm having some cash flow problems."
She stands there in the middle of the Hong Kong lawn grid. They look each other up and down carefully.
"I called my boyfriend, but he flaked out on me," she says.
"Another thrasher?"
"The same."
"You made the same mistake I made once," he says.
"What's that?"
"Mixing business with pleasure. Going out with a colleague. It gets very confusing."
"Yeah, I see what you mean."
She's not exactly sure what a colleague is.
"I was thinking that we should be partners," she says.
She's expecting him to laugh at her, but instead he grins and nods his head slightly.
"The same thing occurred to me,
but I'd have to think about how it would work." She's astounded that he would actually be thinking this. Then she gets the sap factor under control and realizes he's waffling, which means he's probably lying. This is probably going to end with him trying to get her into bed.
"I gotta go," she says. "Gotta get home."
Now we'll see how fast he loses interest in the partnership concept. She turns her back on him. Suddenly, they are impaled on Hong Kong robot spotlights one more time. YT feels a sharp bruising pain in her ribs as though someone punched her, but it wasn't Hiro.
He's an unpredictable freak who carries swords, but she can smell chick punchers a mile off. Ow! She says, twisting away from the impact. She looks down to see a small, heavy object bouncing on the ground at their feet. Out in the street, an ancient taxi squeals its tires, getting the hell out of there. A Jeep is hanging out the rear window, shaking his fist at them. He must have thrown a rock at her. Except, it's not a rock. The heavy thing at her feet, the thing that just bounced off of Whitey's ribcage, is a hand grenade. She stares for a second, recognizing it. A well-known cartoon icon made real. Then her feet get knocked out from under her, too fast really to hurt. And just when she's getting reoriented to that, there is a painfully loud bang from another part of the parking lot. And then everything finally stops long enough to be seen and understood. The rat thing has stopped, which they never do. It's part of their mystery that you never get to see them. They move so fast. No one knows what they look like. No one. Except for YT and Hero now. It's bigger than she imagined. The body is Rottweiler-sized, segmented into overlapping hard plates like those of a rhinoceros. The legs are long, curled way up to deliver power like a cheetah's. It must be the tail that makes people refer to it as a rat thing, because that's the only rat-like part. Incredibly long and flexible. But it looks like a rat's tail with the flesh eaten away by acid, because it just consists of segments, hundreds of them, neatly plugged together like vertebrae. Jesus H. Christ, Hero says. And she knows from that he's never seen one either. Right now, the tail is coiled and piled around on top of the rat thing's body, like a rope that has fallen out of a tree. Parts of it are trying to move, other parts of it look dead and inert. The legs are moving one by one, spasmodically, not acting in concert. The whole thing just looks terribly wrong, like footage of an airplane that has had its tail blown off, trying to maneuver for a landing. Even someone who is not an engineer can see that it has gone all perverse and twisted. The tail writhes and lashes like a snake, uncoils itself, rises up off the rat thing's body, gets out of the way of its legs. But still, the legs have problems. It can't get itself up. YT, Hero is saying. Don't. She does. One footstep at a time, she approaches the rat thing. It's dangerous in case you hadn't noticed, Hero says, following her a few paces behind. They say it has biological components.
Biological components?
Animal parts, so it might be unpredictable. She likes animals. She keeps walking. She's seeing it better now. It's not all armor and muscle. A lot of it actually looks kind of flimsy. It has short, stubby, wing-like things projecting from its body. A big one from each shoulder, and a row of smaller ones down the length of its spine, like on a stegosaurus. Her night visions tell her that these things are hot enough to bake pizzas on. As she approaches, they seem to unfold and grow. They are blooming like flowers in an educational film, spreading and unfolding to reveal a fine, complicated internal structure that has been all collapsed together inside. Each stubby wing splits off into little miniature copies of itself, and each of those in turn splits off into more smaller copies and so on, forever. The smallest ones are just tiny bits of foil, so small that from a distance the edges look fuzzy. It is continuing to get hotter. The little wings are almost red-hot now. YT slides her goggles up onto her forehead and cups her hands around her face to block out the surrounding lights. And, sure enough, she can see them beginning to make a dull brownish glow, like an electric stove element that has just been turned on. The grass underneath the rat thing is beginning to smoke. Careful. Supposedly they have really nasty isotopes inside, Hero says behind her. He has come up a little closer now, but he's still hanging way back.
What's an isotope?
A radioactive substance that makes heat. That's its energy source.
How do you turn it off?
You don't. It keeps making heat until it melts. YT is only a few feet away from the rat thing now, and she can feel the heat on her cheeks. The wings have unfolded as far as they can go. At their roots, they are a bright yellow-orange, fading out through red and brown to their delicate edges, which are still dark. The acrid smoke of the burning grass obscures some of the details. She thinks the edges of the wings look like something I've seen before. They look like the thin metal veins that run up the outside of a window air conditioner. The ones that you can write your name in by mashing them down with your finger. Or like the radiator on a car. The fan blows air over the radiator to cool off the engine. It's got radiators, she says. The rat thing has got radiators to cool off. She's gathering intel right at this very moment. But it's not cooling off. It's just getting hotter. YT surfs through traffic jams for a living. That's her economic niche, beating the traffic. And she knows that a car doesn't boil over when it is speeding down an open freeway. It boils over when it is stopped in traffic. Because when it sits still, not enough air is being blown over the radiator. That's what's happening to the rat thing right now. It has to keep moving, keep forcing air over its radiators, or else it overheats and melts down. Cool, she says. I wonder if it's going to blow up or what. The body converges to a sharp nose. In the front, it bends down sharply, and there is a black glass canopy raked sharply like the windshield of a fighter plane. If the rat thing has eyes, this is where it looks out. Under that, where the jaw should be, are the remains of some kind of mechanical stuff that has been mostly blown off by the explosion of the grenade. The black glass windshield, or face mask, or whatever you call it, has a hole blown through it, big enough that YT could put her hand through. On the other side of that hole, it's dark, and she can't see much, especially so close to the bright orange glare coming from the radiators. But she can see that red stuff is coming out from inside. And it ain't no Dexron, too. The rat thing is hurt, and it's bleeding. This thing is real, she says. It's got blood in its veins. She's thinking, this is intel. This is intel. I can make money off of this with my partner, my pod, Hero. Then she thinks, the poor thing is burning itself alive. Don't do it. Don't touch it, YT, Hero says. She steps right up to it, flips her goggles down to protect her face from the heat. The rat thing's legs stop their spasmodic movements as though waiting for her. She bends down and grabs its front legs. They react, tightening their pushrod muscles against the pull of her hands. It's exactly like grabbing a dog by the front legs and asking it to dance. This thing is alive. It reacts to her. She knows. She looks up at Hero just to make sure he's taking this all in. He is. Jerk, she says. I stick my neck out and say I want to be your partner and you say you want to think about it? What's your problem? I'm not good enough to work with you? She leans back and begins dragging the rat thing backward across the lawn grid. It's incredibly light. No wonder it can run so fast. She could pick it up if she felt like burning herself alive. As she drags it backward toward the doggy door, it brands a blackened, smoking trail into the lawn grid. She can see steam rising up out of her coverall, old sweat and stuff boiling out of the fabric. She's small enough to fit through the doggy door, another thing she can do and Hero can't. Usually these things are locked. She's tried to mess with them, but this one is opened. Inside the franchise is bright, white, robot-polished floors. A few feet from the doggy door is what looks like a black washing machine. This is the rat thing's hutch, where it lurks in darkness and privacy, waiting for a job to do. It is wired into the franchise by a thick cable coming out of the wall. Right now, the hutch's door is hanging open, which is another thing she's never seen before, and steam is rolling out from inside of it. Not steam, cold stuff, like when you open your freezer door on a humid day. She pushes the rat thing into its hutch. Some kind of cold liquid sprays out of all the walls and bursts into steam before it even reaches the rat thing's body. And the steam comes blasting out the front of the hutch so powerfully that it knocks her on her ass. The long tail is strung out the front of the hutch, across the floor and out through the doggy door. She picks up part of it, the sharp, machine-tooled edges of its vertebrae pinching her gloves. Suddenly it tenses, comes alive, vibrates for a second. She jerks her hands back. The tail shoots back inside the hutch like a rubber band snapping. She can't even see it move. Then the hutch door slams shut. A janitor robot, A Hoover with a brain hums out of another doorway to clean the long streaks of blood off the floor. Above her, hanging on the foyer wall facing the main entrance, is a framed poster with a garland of well-browned jasmine blossoms hung around it. It consists of a photo of the wildly grinning Mr. Lee with the usual statement underneath. Welcome. It is my pleasure to welcome all quality folks to visiting of Hong Kong. Whether seriously in business or on a fun-loving hijink, make yourself totally homely in this meager environment. If any aspect is not utterly harmonious, gratefully bring it to my notice and I shall strive to earn your satisfaction. We of Greater Hong Kong take many prides in our tiny nation's extravagant growth. The ones who saw our isle as a morsel of Red China's pleasure have struck their faces in keen astonishment to see many great so-called powers of the olden guard reel in dismay before our leaping strides and charged-up hustling, freewheeling idiom of high-tech personal accomplishment and betterment of all peoples. The potentials of all ethnic races and anthropologies to merge under a banner of the three principles to follow. Number one, information, information, information. Number two, totally fair marketeering. Number three, strict ecology. Have been peerless in the history of economic strife. Who would disdain to subscribe under this flowing banner? If you have not attained your Hong Kong citizenship, apply for a passport now. In this month, the usual fee of 100 Hong Kong dollars will be kindly neglected. Fill out a coupon below now. If coupons are lacking, dial 1-800-HONG-KONG instantly to apply from the help of our wizened operators. Mr. Lee's Greater Hong Kong is a private, wholly extraterritorial, sovereign, quasi-national entity not recognized by any other nationalities and in no way affiliated with the former Crown Colony of Hong Kong, which is part of the People's Republic of China. The People's Republic of China admits or accepts no responsibility for Mr. Lee, the government of Greater Hong Kong, or any of the citizens thereof, or for any violations of local law, personal injury, or property damage occurring in territories, buildings, municipalities, institutions, or real estate owned, occupied, or claimed by Mr. Lee's Greater Hong Kong. Join us instantly. Your enterprising partner, Mr. Lee.
Back in his cool little house, Semi-Autonomous Guard Unit number A-367 is howling. Outside in the yard, it was very hot, and he felt bad. Whenever he is out in the yard, he gets hot unless he keeps running. When he got hurt and had to lie down for a long time, he felt hotter than he had ever been before. Now he doesn't feel hot anymore, but he is still hurt. He is howling his injured howl. He is telling all the neighbor doggies that he needs help. They feel sad and upset and repeat his howl and pass it along to all the rest of the doggies. Soon he hears the vet's car approaching. The nice vet will come and make him feel better. He starts barking again. He is telling all the other doggies about how the bad strangers came and hurt him, and how hot it was out in the yard when he had to lie down, and how the nice girl helped him and took him back to his cool house. Right in front of the Hong Kong franchise, YT notices a black town car that has been sitting there for a while. She doesn't have to see the plates to know it's Mafia. Only the Mafia drives cars like that. The windows are blackened, but she knows someone's in there keeping an eye on her. How do they do it? You see these town cars everywhere, but you never see them move, never see them get any place. She's not even sure they have engines in them.
Okay. Sorry, Hero says. I keep my own thing going, but we have a partnership for any intel you can dig up. 50-50 split.
Deal,
she says, climbing onto her plank.
Call me anytime. You have my card.
Hey, that reminds me. Your card said you're into the three M's of software?
Yeah. Music, movies, and microcode.
You heard of Vitalis Chernobyl and the Meltdowns?
No. Is that a band?
Yeah.
It's the greatest band.
You should check it out, homeboy. It's going to be the next big thing.
She coasts out onto the road and poons an Audi with Blooming Green's license plates. It ought to take her home. Mom's probably in bed, pretending to sleep, being worried. Half a block from the entrance to Blooming Green's, she unpoons the Audi and coasts into a McDonald's. She goes into the ladies. It has a hung ceiling. She stands on the seat of the third toilet, pushes up on one of the ceiling tiles, moves it aside. A cotton sleeve tumbles out, bearing a delicate floral print. She pulls on it and hauls down the whole ensemble. The blouse, the pleated skirt, underwear from Vicky's, the leather shoes, the necklace and earrings, even a fucking purse. She takes off her Radicaea's coverall, wads it up, sticks it into the ceiling, replaces the loose tile. Then she puts on the ensemble. Now she looks just like she did when she had breakfast with Mom this morning. She carries her plank down the street to Blooming Green's, where it's legal to carry them, but not to put them on the crete. She flashes her passport at the border post, walks a quarter of a mile down crisp new sidewalks, and up to the house where the porch light is on. Mom's sitting in the den in front of her computer as usual. Mom works for the feds. Feds don't make much money, but they have to work hard to show their loyalty. Whitey goes in and looks at her mother, who has slumped down in her chair, put her hands around her face almost like she's voguing, put bare-stockinged feet up. She wears these awful cheap fed stockings that are like scouring cloth, and when she walks, her thighs rub together underneath her skirt and make a rasping noise. There is a heavy-duty Ziploc bag on the table, full of water that used to be ice a couple of hours ago. YT looks at Mom's left arm. She has rolled up her sleeve to expose the fresh bruise just above her elbow, where they put the blood pressure cuff. Weekly fed polygraph test. "Is that you?" Mom shouts, not realizing that Whitey's in the room. Whitey retreats into the kitchen so she won't surprise her mother. "Yeah, Mom," she shouts back. "How was your day?" "I'm tired," Mom says. It's what she always says. Whitey pinches a beer from the fridge and starts running a hot bath. It makes a roaring sound that relaxes her, like the white noise generator on Mom's nightstand.